Indie 1015, welcome this week to the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. It is a pleasure to be back. It's a pleasure to have you. I'm very excited for today's show. We have a very special, special episode today. If you recall, a couple weeks ago, I presented an album called Joyride, which has just come out on February 18th, so almost a month ago. However, I mean, it's something we've continued to play on the show and will continue to do so. And I had the chance to talk to the oboist of the accordion oboist folk jazz fusion group, of which comprises Joyride, Colin Mayer, and Charles Cousins. I got the chance to chat with Colin Mayer, about the album and about some of the songs, the work they did, how it got there. We just talked about it, talked about some other stuff as well, just jazz and the uniqueness of the album. So it was a lot of fun, and it was insightful to see his thoughts and what he wanted people to perceive from the music and the album. So we'll have that interview up for you in a little bit. That will comprise most of the show. And then, of course, we have our usual music this week featuring Johnny Costa, Grover Washington, the Blue Note 7, as well as Avishai Cohen. Another special thing to discuss. Avishai Cohen has just released a new album as well. And it's a very unique album in how it's set up. It doesn't have songs, it's parts. It's nearly one large song, I suppose, and that's just broken down. And that is because it plays off of, I believe it's a single bar, a single, how do you say, a phrase of music, which starts in part two, which is what we'll play. And then throughout the rest of the album, it just kind of plays off that tune and explores what to do. It's kind of a variation of themes, but in a very unique way and in a fresh way, something that I hadn't heard or seen before. It's called The Naked Truth, this album, like I said, just releasing, and it was described as the raw beauty and vulnerability of a sound throughout the album, very much of music of the moment, which I think is very true. It's very much shaped by the recording sessions. You can tell that it was how they felt that day, and that's kind of what was produced. So to kick off today's show, I guess we'll get started with that, and then we'll have our interview in a little bit and much more music. So stay tuned. This is Johnny Athens on Indie 101.5. Indy 115, welcome back to the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. I hope you enjoyed that little break. That was Avishai Cohen with part two from the new album, The Naked Truth, an album described as a two-year meditation. He had been sitting with the main motif of Naked Truth since the start of COVID, which is the eight-note motif we heard in part two. And then, of course, that was followed by a Little Bee's poem by the Blue Note 7. And here we are now finding ourselves getting prepared for this interview. Colin Mayer joins me now from Joyride to talk about the new self-titled album. It's a fusion, to say the least, between oboe and accordion. Curious instruments indeed, but they make it work. So without further ado, I'll let Colin talk more about the album and his works. This is Colin Mayer talking with me, Johnny Athens, here on Indie 115. I did have one question. The very first thing was that I noticed that this album was brought in participation with the government of Canada.
Yes, it was.
Now, my question is, how does that go about? Did the Prime Minister specifically request you to make Joyride? Is that how this works?
That's right. No, the way it is, yeah, there's granting bodies, right? So I don't know how it works other places, right? But in here, you know, there's municipal, federal, and provincial levels for funding. And most of the arts funding that you can receive for type projects like this, they're maybe arts-based. They're not necessarily based on like a marketing plan or anything like that. Like if you wanted to the strange of the arts kind of thing, if you wanted to hear what oboe sounds like underwater playing with whales, you might get a grant, even if there's no, like, nothing comes out of it.
Right, okay.
But FACTOR stands for Foundation Assisting Canadian Talent on Recordings. And that is through – it's an arm of the Canada Council Arts Foundation. And this is my fifth grant I've received from them to make albums.
Oh, right on.
And FACTOR itself is – I mean, it's pretty amazing. They will fund, depending on what level of an artist you are, like from me to Justin Bieber.
Right.
You know, those guys get more. And if you're a record company, you get lots of money. But, you know, you can get up to like $60,000 for production and marketing costs.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty much it gives you an opportunity. The way I sort of explain to people is it, You want to make a CD that's cool, but like it doesn't do you anything, like having a CD, whatever. But yeah. FACTOR allows you as the artist to act as your own independent record label.
Right. Okay.
For that one-time project, okay, anything you wanted to do that a record label might do for you, and they do this so that guys like me, you know, who play a weird instrument, they say, sure, you can make this and we'll support you. And it's at the end of 2 years, like the loan becomes a grant. And at the end, the most important thing is that you own the masters of the music.
Right. Okay.
They want that. That's like, it's number one. You can't just go through FACTOR and then give all the rights to a distributor.
Right.
And so, yeah.
It's just all cool. You. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. A lot of responsibility and a lot of work.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Come easy, yeah.
For sure. Government-issued music. It's not something you see every day.
That's right. That's right, exactly.
And you mentioned there, you know, playing oboes with whale sounds and getting really creative with the stuff. And I feel like there's a lot of creativity on this album. Like, one thing when I was listening through I noticed is there's a lot of different length in the songs, which I'm a big fan of. And there's a lot of different styles that you two explore. It's something that definitely has something for everyone, I think.
Oh, thank you.
I just thought, yeah, that kind of works really well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, appreciate that.
And I mean, I guess that comes through you as well, because in the little write-up, I did read that not only are you an oboist and multi-instrumentalist, but a dancer, actor, singer, stuntman, martial artist, and choreographer.
Yeah.
Is this, how does all this factor, and they said it factors into your stage performances. Is this true?
Yeah, I try to as much as I can. The reason why I do a lot of these things, like I got put into a lot of activities as a kid. This is just how it started. So it was like martial arts as a kid, and then I was involved in dance and performing as an actor and those types of things, and then music. And so my parents, you know, supported everything and made sure that I was able to do whatever I wanted with that stuff. And then, so grade 12, when I told them, yeah, I think I'm going to go into the arts. No, like you made me like this. Like you didn't send me up to science camp or anything. You sent me up to, you know, ballet camp. So like, I'm sorry, this is what it is. The other thing is that I just really love what I do. I love performing of any kind. And so any opportunity to do something, that's not quote unquote a real job, you know, I'll take. So if somebody says, you know, we're gonna do something, I'll say yes, and then I'll figure out how to do it. So that's sort of been the way I've approached a lot of these things. And yeah, I worked as a stuntman. I was with Cirque du Soleil, and I did some stunt stuff for some TV and film. And I performed with musical theater, like professional stuff, for
right on, like,
close to 20 years as an actor. And then I was about 30, 33, and I'd almost done the bucket list in terms of what I wanted to do. You know, my bucket list would include Broadway. I hadn't made it there yet, but
next year.
Next year, there's always next year. So I was like, you know, I'm getting older. I'm 33, and you know, that kind of stuff takes a toll on your body. Mm-hmm. And you know, my feet and my Achilles and everything was dying me. It started killing me. So I sort of transitioned to music, which is what I went to school for, and I had kept up all this time. And then just, you know, right place at the right time, and I got into a group called Quartetto Gelato, which is a well-known Canadian classical crossover group, mm-hmm, as their oboist, and that led into so many things. Like they, when I got in, Peter DeSoto, who was the I'm not talking too much, am I?
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay, all right.
This is your moment, Colin.
Yeah.
Seize it.
No, I'm gonna talk. No. I'm tired. I'm almost getting tired of talking about myself. But it's, I appreciate the help. So thank you. So Peter, the founder, you're replacing an oboe player. So I come in, and you know, hey, you do these other things. Okay, why don't you play all those other instruments on stage? Cool. And then we came up with ideas for like this big gypsy thing. Where, what if I, you know, do some acrobatics during the piece? So yeah, I'd do some flips and dive rolls and dancing while the song's, not necessarily while I'm playing. And then there was another one because of the dance stuff, I would do the splits. So, you know, we created a thing in one of the oboe solos where during the big cadenza, I'd go into splits and play the oboe. So yeah, we try and bring a level of theatricality to what we're doing with Joyride, because, you know, because I like to do it. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And we like surprising people. And that's kind of, in a lot of ways, why the album is the way it is, because, you know, we tell stories and then we sort of play, and nobody really knows what's going to happen with an oboe and accordion. So we kind of, in a way, have carte blanche for that. Like, there's no precedent set of you got to play it one way. Well, we want to do all these different things. And the idea behind the name Joyride is, like, if you were to see a show, we would like to provide an experience to the listener and the watcher that you're going to have a variety of ups and downs, like you're on a roller coaster or going on a joyride where, you know, you don't know. It's kind of spontaneous and fun, and just be in the moment and see where it takes you. So I hope I answered your question.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I was kind of – it was a good thing you mentioned that, because – I remember when I was listening to the album with a friend of mine, that's kind of how we felt looking at the track listings. We were like, you know, we'd say Tiger Rag. It's like, oh, what did they do with that? Like, we have to listen. Like, song after song, we were just like, you're just curious to see what it would be, like how it would sound. Because you have, like, some classics of, like, Clair de Lune and Flight of the Bumblebee, right? And it's like, how do you take a spin on that with, like you said, the oboe and the... Mm-hmm. accordion and, you know, whatever else instruments happen to be on there, just because It was exciting just to like listen, right? And so I think you guys succeeded in coming through with the joyride. Absolutely.
I'm very lucky that Charles is my partner in this. Charles is, I don't know if you've done research on what he's done, but he's worked with literally everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's still actively performing and writing music, and he's got projects all the time. So he made a career for, I don't know how many decades, 40, 50 years, as an arranger and a composer. He was having a lot of fun writing a lot, because he did, if you noticed, a lot of the arrangements, if not all of them, I believe.
Right.
And he spent a lot of time, and I'm not sure if there's many arrangers who could have done the kind of stuff that he's done, or with the creative twist and all that stuff. He's quite a genius. Probably one of the most well-rounded musicians that I've ever met, from as an actual performer to a arranger, composer to a producer. I think he's got 250 albums that he's produced.
Wow.
He wrote some stuff for the Queen. Like he's worked with.
I'm a big fan of the Queen's music. That's incredible. That's
yeah. So
no, for sure, you definitely have a great dynamic duo going on with this album. And
thank you.
Like I said, that's why it was just so fun to listen, because you never knew where it was gonna go. Even within the song, it'd start, you'd be like, okay, so this is what they're doing, and then it would go into something different. And I mean, I guess that's just part of what jazz is, but I think this was definitely something special as well.
Oh, well, thank you.
So what do you feel is the most innovative part of this album then, talking about this kind of exploration?
In terms of innovation, that's an interesting one. I think I never really thought about it that it was innovative or inventive. I just Charles and I approached this album like, what do you want to do? Like, let's just have fun. Mm-hmm. So I think in retrospect, looking back in hindsight, you don't necessarily go out to try and be innovative or inventive.
Right.
So I'm not sure, like, if I was to look at it now and say, what is innovative? I mean, approach to, I would say for myself, like, approach to the playing of an oboe. For example, there's a Rhapsody in Blue. Like, that's the clarinet mm-hmm. solo. So, there's approaches to some of the songs that most oboe players want to do. There's not necessarily an outlet for them to do it.
Right.
And it's not part of the schooling or education. And there aren't many oboists out there, like, that you can hear what these people have done. So, that's been tricky. Like, if you wanted to get some ideas for crazy guitar music, I mean,
exactly.
It's all over the place. Like, at all these people that have done these things, and people who've innovated and changed the instruments themselves to suddenly, like, create a Chapman stick or mm-hmm. create some sort of double-necked guitar, like, so they can do more. It's not like that with the oboe. It hasn't gone cross genres. It hasn't been developed to accommodate a lot of different things. So for me, that was something that I really wanted to push the boundaries of when possible.
Right.
Just for myself, because I wanted to see if we could do it. And I know the same thing with Charles too. He really wanted to see how he could take songs like the Clair de Lune and the Somewhere Under the Rainbow or mm-hmm. Over the Rainbow.
Yes.
Like, how can we do this? How can we have that kind of like gorgeous Debussy harmonic content, and that just where it just has this sense of something that only you get from Debussy. Mm-hmm. And how do we combine this in a way that's just not like a, I don't know, just putting them on top of each other like a mashup? Is how do we do this, right? He's got his own orchestra too, so we were able to play with some of the string players from that orchestra.
So I guess that's
probably what I would say, but we didn't go into it to say, let's be innovative.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I think that's a good point. I didn't really think about that, how in some ways you're kind of pushing the limits of the oboe that haven't maybe necessarily been done before.
Yeah, I mean, it's I would never say that it hasn't been done before, because you know, I don't know all the oboists in the world that are doing things, but to what I've seen, there's a handful of guys who are doing some jazz stuff. There's a handful of them, and there's a handful who are doing some other maybe folk stuff. So there's people out there doing that stuff, but yeah, it's not like it's not mainstream. Like when I think of bassoon and the innovations that some players like Paul Hansen or Michael Rabinovich have done to that instrument, where you know, that's they changed the instrument and the culture of that instrument is on such a global scale. Even banjo, was just you know, a bluegrass instrument, and then you know, everybody knows what Bela Fleck has done to that.
Yeah,
he just turned it on its head and just was like, oh yeah. So yeah, hopefully people, but you know, at the end of the day, I don't really want people to even notice. I mean, the oboe is an instrument. It's not, it's just whatever it is. It's
I could be
playing the saxophone or the violin. It doesn't really matter. It's not about, look at me playing this instrument, the oboe. It's not really about that. Like, hopefully the music speaks for itself and then nobody even notices that it's an oboe. That would be great. So nobody feels that it's out of context.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I guess that goes into how part of the challenge of the album, I guess you could say, is just the ability to reach beyond classical and folk space and into a new audience. Right? Was that kind of something you had in mind? Were you trying to kind of fuse all these things together, but also make them as appealing as possible, I guess? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's trying to bridge, because to break into, let's say, a jazz festival and you're playing what we're playing, it can be tough.
Mm-hmm.
But bridging the gap between the classical and the jazz world, like there's people who are maybe coming in that, so it's trying to appeal to, you're right, like appeal to people like that. But I think most musicians that you talk to, who've done it for a long time, you hit the point where you say, like, of course I want to have my music be liked, and of course I want people to play it and have, you know, whatever. But you can't control that. I can't control whether they like it or not. I can't control if they like me or not. I have no control. So we decided, let's just play how we play. Let's play how we want to play. And if people like it, that's awesome. If they don't, that's awesome. It doesn't, you know, I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be hurt.
Right.
Because we're doing it our way. And hopefully, if we're, you know, enthusiastic about what we've done and we're happy and proud about it, that will come across. And, you know, people will just walk away with a great experience listening to the either listening to the CD or watching a live performance, you know, rather than thinking oboe and accordion the whole night, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's a commendable thing, I think. And you are right, you do see a lot of musicians. I find, especially in the ones I've talked to in the jazz scene, most of the time it's really just, you know, they just want to play the music, and then they're just happening to get it out there. That's why there's an album, right? So yeah, I think that's a really commendable effort there. And
thank you.
Like you said, I think, I'm not sure that, like, when we were listening, we were necessarily conscious of, like, the oboe and accordion, but it was definitely something you kind of looked forward to. Like, at least for me, it was fun to see how it would be brought into, you know, the next piece, right?
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. Yeah, and the colors of those instruments, you know, add so much. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing too is that obviously, like, Charles plays piano quite a lot on the album.
Yeah.
It's probably split quite evenly between piano and accordion. And I think that's really, really helpful, because the sound, you know, the colors of an accordion, just like the colors of a piano, like, or, you know, you hear that same thing, a whole album of guitar music, you just kind of need a palate cleanser.
Yes.
So being able to go between the strings and then piano and then accordion and mixing them up together made a massive difference to the, I guess, the changes.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, you're hearing accordion, but yeah, it's actually not, it's not in the context of how you'd expect it to be.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And you're not going to get, and hopefully you're not going to get tired of the colors because they're changing quite a bit. And just when you're like, I don't know if I can have any more accordion, then the piano comes in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is a good kind of symbiotic balance there, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So before we wrap this up, is there anything else specifically you might want to mention about the album or any current work?
Well, we're trying to get out and try and play live concerts as things are getting back, so that's great. We're looking forward to getting out and doing that.
Absolutely.
We're excited. The CD has been getting like quite a bit of positive response, and it's been played in many places around the world so far. So we're very excited about that.
It's fun.
We're planning some other projects right now. I'm trying to even think about if there's any like really, really big things, but there's some festivals that we're going to be involved with in the summer that we're, you know, discussing things with.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, just hope to play more music and just get out there and play live. That's what we're looking to do.
Yeah, I think that's something that not only are musicians really excited to get back into live performance, but I think that a lot of listeners are also really excited to get back to the live performances as well.
Big time. I think a lot of musicians are probably most musicians for the past 20, 30 years, you know, as keyboards became more popular in pit orchestras for musicals, let's say, and people were going out less to clubs, and clubs were closing, and you can just get your music online.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people were worried, like, you know, what's going to happen to our industry and all the performing arts? Is it going to survive? Because other things are being taken over by robots, and they're dying. So what about us? And COVID, all the lockdowns, it showed to me that, yeah, everybody, yeah, let's go on. Let's watch Lyle Lovett and Sarah McLachlan on TV. And it was beautifully produced, and it sounds great, but there was something about it that was slightly missing.
Yep.
And that live element, it's the intangible live element is,
yep,
and everybody feels it. Everybody knows it, and everybody feels it. So I'm not worried about our industry at all ever going away after what we just went through.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it kind of worked as a reminder, kind of reawoken that kind of feeling that, like, this is something special, right? So that kind
of
feeling.
Yeah, and we took all this stuff for granted here, you know? And,
yeah.
And the world's falling apart. We got viruses and we got World War III. And let's put things into perspective here. Like, we're pretty lucky to be doing what we're doing, and we just want to go out and be social and be with people and watch live anything.
Yeah, it's very true.
Eat with other people at a restaurant, like live anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's, more than ever. Very exciting.
Perfect point. Yeah, and I agree. It is very exciting. And I hope to see you guys live sometime soon.
Yes,
in the summer.
Thanks.
I'm looking for some karate chop and martial arts while listening to fantastic jazz music. That's what I'm excited for.
Awesome.
Well, Colin, I thank you very much for your time today and joining me in this interview. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate this.
Perfect. Who knows? Maybe we'll be in touch again. Joyride 2 or the next live performance. I'll catch you.
Oh, yeah.
For
that's
sure.
A good idea.
That'd be perfect.
Awesome. Thanks, Johnny.
No worries. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Indie 1015, welcome back to the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. I hope you enjoyed that little break, that interview. It was very exciting talking to Colin, and a very enjoyable experience. He's a really nice guy, makes very interesting music, and I'm glad that he could join us on the show. It was interesting learning about the government grant program for making the music and how he interprets that as the kind of creative freedom that he did with Charles Cousins there. And just so many interesting things. I think it's nice that the government allows for that kind of growth and exploration in the arts. And then, of course, that was followed by Tiger Rag, a song off the album Joyride. And I think it's a pretty good embodiment of what Colin was saying there, what he does with Charles in terms of balancing the oboe and the accordion and having them work together in this very interesting way by interpreting a very original tune, a very classic song. And then after that, we had It's Such a Good Feeling by Johnny Costa, a sound that I'm sure many folks will recognize if they ever watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Johnny Costa did the music for the show, and of course, It's Such a Good Feeling is the song he would sing, I believe, when he's heading out every day of the show. When he says goodbye, it's such a good feeling to know you're alive. Wake up ready to say, let's make it a snappy new day. And to close out the show, we'll have Bernie Sinensky with One Is Enough. And Bernie Sinensky is someone I've also had the pleasure to interview. An interview you can watch, if you missed it, on the website Indie 115. We have all the archives of the shows on there, and I believe that one was from actually about a month ago now. It might be a month exactly. So if you missed it, you can always check it out. Otherwise, there are our social medias, Johnny Athens, on Instagram. So feel free to check that out, get up to date. I'll post all the interviews we do on the social medias, probably on the Facebook page, Johnny Athens Entertainment, and then you can listen to them at your leisure. But other than that, it's all from me. This is One Is Enough on Indie 1015. Good night, and take care. Thank you.
CIOI.
Indy 101.5. Hamilton's home for alternative.
At the Great Plains begin, driving down a corduroy.